Simple scales, fancy fails. Simple stuff done really well over and over. And when you pour the gasoline on that, that's what grows a company. Fixating on complicated solutions, it's never going to work. How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a billion-dollar portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build. I just finished 2024 planning with four of my portfolio companies, and I want to share with you how I plan to grow all of them in 2024. My goal for you for this is that you can take away the principles that I'm using to grow my companies to grow yours as well. So the first principle I want to share with you, I call the gun to head frame. Now, before I get into what that means, let me tell you a little story. So I was on a call with one of our portfolio companies. They're doing about $50 million a year right now. And the goal was, how are we going to add $2 million in EBITDA? EBITDA is basically cash in your pocket to the business over the next year. And everyone starts talking about, oh gosh, like how are we going to add $2 million EBITDA? Like how much revenue would we have to add EBITDA? And it's just going all over the place. It's a little disorganized. And then people start talking about, you know what? I think the best way that we could add $2 million EBITDA is, what if we started a new product line? And that product line actually served enterprise level customers. So to give you context, this business currently serves SMB customers, which is a small business owner. Okay. So they serve businesses that are usually doing anywhere from $300,000 a year to maybe like 1.5 or 2 million a year. And the goal was, okay, let's open up this new product line that can serve businesses that are doing anywhere between 20 to 30 million a year. And so everyone's sitting on the meeting and everyone's like, yeah, nodding their heads. Like, that sounds like a great, logically, yes. Like, you know, it's the same type of business. They're just a bigger business. It's an enterprise versus the small businesses. So let's just go upstream. And so I sat there listening. And the one thing that kept coming to mind for me was, if I had a gun to my head, this wouldn't be the way that I would bet that I would make $2 million in profit this year. In fact, I started doing all the math. I'm like, wow, okay, so currently, the resources we have in the company, the marketing, the sales, the product, the customer success, the finance, all supports SMB customers. And now we're saying, hey, easy, let's just go after the enterprise clients we've been turning away. Okay, well, has anyone thought through how long is it going to take to be able to learn how to attract those enterprise customers? How long is it going to take to train and hire a sales team that can sell enterprise customers? How long is it going to take to have a product that they tell their friends about and rave about? And how long is it going to take to have a team who knows how to support enterprise customers, which is completely different than a small business owner? And so when I laid this out in my head, I said to myself, I think that this would probably start generating revenue if I had to back into how long each of those things are going to take, right? Because let's think about a new marketing campaign alone, I would say like striking first blood, that might take 3 or 4 months just on its own. And then we've got to get the sales team hired, and then we've got to get them trained up, and then we've got to nail the pitch, and that's probably going to take another 8 weeks. And then, oh wait, all this time, what the hell are we actually selling, right? We don't even have a product. And like, we actually have never worked with enterprise before, so how do we even know what they want? Do we know what they want to buy? Do we know that they really want what we have? Do we know that they couldn't live without it? And so the frame that I gave them is, I said, listen, if I had a gun to my head, the way I would make $2 million in EBITDA would not be by doing this. And everyone kind of stopped and they were like, why? I was like, I believe that if we did this, it would probably be 8 to 9 months before we even made a dollar. And that doesn't even take into account all of the costs that go into building the new marketing, building the new sales, hiring everybody up front, training the new team, not to mention the cost of split attention. Because if you've ever had a business where you've served two customers or two completely different kind of customers, it's a different business, right? We call it a product line, but like, you might as well say, guess what? I've had products and I've had businesses. It's almost the same damn thing. And people basically structure them the same way, because anyone that has two businesses usually shares services anyways, which is what you do with product. Most people don't even know the difference. So that being said, the frame is, if you're trying to figure out this year, how am I going to make more money? Then you want to ask yourself, and this is the frame I give myself, gun to head, if I had to make $2 million this year, what would I do? And what that does is that frame puts me in a state of mind of, if I had to be damn sure, bet on my life that I was going to make $2 million, what would I do? It also happens to be that what you choose is usually something That is using existing resources, that is not a departure from your mission and not a departure from your strategy, and is more additive than it is a departure. And so the cool thing is that you usually come up with a better plan. It just doesn't sound as cool. So I said, cool, let's look at, in the past 12 months, what did work really well? In fact, let's look at the P&L for the last 12 months and where did we make the most money? And it happened to be that that business made a ton of money from two events that they hosted. And so I said, is there any reason why we've only done two? And then the response was, well, we've always just done two a year. And I was like, that's so interesting because in those 2 months, you make four times as much profit as any other month. Is there a reason that we wouldn't do it every quarter or every month or every week? And they were all like, no, we've just never done it that way. Right. And so I said, I think a great way that we could make $2 million in profit this year is let's just do four more events. We already know they work. We just need to do more of them. And it was like a light bulb went off for everyone in the room. In fact, the highest level executives all were like, yeah, you're right. And I was like, do you see how that would be so much easier than starting up this new product line? And they were like, no, you're 100% correct. Like, it will take a year. So like, the question is this. If the goal is to increase profit, increase cash flow, say that's what you want to do with your company this year, you need to think differently. Do you need cash in the short term or the long term? Because option B over here, which is build out the enterprise level for clients, is something that is an investment and is probably going to take 2 years to significantly cash flow the business. Because like you get, say you're making money by month 9, but you're not even recouping your initial investment until like month 15. And then you've got like in year 2, you're like really cranking. And that's if it works. And if your team is able to support it and pivot and not lose focus over here, which I would say if your goal is to make money, then it's a bad strategy to do that because you're going to feel pressure to go faster because you're like, I need to make money though. I need to make money. It's like, wait, that's not how we do this right. If we're just trying to do this to make money, then it's not the best path to go. Now, if we want to make money, what can we do more of that we're already doing successfully? Here's the thing. We have a saying, which is simple scales, fancy fails. Most founders think of the most complex ways to grow their businesses. And I have fallen in this many times. We started Allen, which was a software company. And we're like, yeah, software. Everyone does software. They're all saying it's great. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a software CEO. And I like wore glasses every day. And I was like dressing up differently and wearing a jacket to my Zoom meetings and joined all the software groups. And I was talking at the software events. I was like, yeah, software is the way to grow this. And then as I got into it, I was like, wow, this software that was supposed to be so cool is like sucking a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of attention. And it wasn't that the software was bad, but it was that it was such a large departure from our original business. It actually ended up becoming its own business and selling separately. And that came from thinking, oh gosh, you know what the best way to make more money is? Start a software business. Said nobody smart ever. And so I say this not to make you feel stupid, but to impress upon you, I have done this too. I have made this mistake. And now I do this for a living, which is help companies grow and make more money. And the thing that I have seen from time and time again is that we always overcomplicate growth. Complex systems do not scale. Simple scales, fancy fails. The reason we say that is because think about it. If you've got this company and it's got all these crazy complex parts, when you add pressure to the system, what happens? Does it grow or does it just entangle itself more? And so what you want to do is identify the systems or the departments that are successful and already feel easy and then pour more gas on them. Another frame that you can give this is just double down on your strengths. You're already doing something well in your business. I'm sure if you're watching this, maybe you don't have a business, right? Maybe you're doing a really great job procrastinating. Don't do that. Don't do more of that. But if you do have a business and you have things that are going really well, what you want to do is I want you to sit down and write down what are the top three things that I do in my business that are, I would say, successful actions. What are the top three things? And then how can you do more of those things to make more money in 2024? It sounds ridiculously simple, but here's the thing. Everyone's always looking for complex answers because you think, oh gosh, there's some silver bullet. There's not. Do more of what works, do less of what doesn't work. Now, if you're watching this and maybe you're like, you know, I would love to grow my business, but it's actually not even growing right now. Like, I feel like there's problems I need to solve before I can even think about doubling anything. Okay. The same frame can be applied. Gun to head. What is the solution that is going to fix this the fastest? What is the surest solution? Somebody's putting a gun to my head and they were like, you have to solve this problem right now. What will I choose? Same frame. Now I can give you the example I use this, which is I was with another portfolio company that we happen to own a decent amount of, and the founder and the executive team were talking about this problem. And the entire call was like an hour and a half talking about this very tactical, detailed problem, like to the extent where I was like grabbing a coffee, which I don't drink during the day because I was like, oh my God, this is like so in the weeds of like button clicking and like colors and font. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, gun to head. If I were to say why we're not growing from a marketing standpoint, I don't know if it would be the tiny copy we changed or the button color. I think it might be that the product hasn't been changed in 7 years and might suck. Let's get out of the weeds for a second, but like, real talk, we haven't updated the product and the marketing is the same marketing that we used 6 years ago. Why do we think that changing a Facebook pixel is going to solve this problem? And a lot of people, when they're not able to zoom out, the solution is very tactical. It's like, oh, this is, and what I can tell you is this, that will probably band-aid whatever is happening. But what happens is a lot of companies just keep slapping one band-aid on, ripping it off, slapping another one on, ripping it off. All the meanwhile, there's like a broken bone over there. And it's like, you're putting a band-aid and your leg is broken. You need to go to the doctor and get a surgery. And so that is another frame to give you, because if you're working on a problem and it is a problem that you need to chunk up for, a lot of people, it's like they're constantly looking at the problem. They're thinking of all these crazy, abnormal, unique ways that their problem needs to be solved because their business is so different than everybody's. When in reality, it might just be that something you need to pull yourself out of the weeds enough to see what the simple solution would be. Would we even have a problem with any of the platforms if the product and the offer was so good people couldn't say no? Because I can tell you this, most of our companies that grow the fastest, they learn all the tactics after they've gotten the strategy right. And when I say they've gotten the strategy right, they have an offer that people would feel stupid saying no to. And so it doesn't matter if they don't have the best funnel, the best ads, the best copy. Why do I not need to be an absolute expert in all those things? Because I understand if I fundamentally don't have a great product offering to the marketplace, then it doesn't matter. So let's get the big right before we focus on the little. I think a lot of people continuously chase the fancy stuff because they haven't been in business long enough to realize that it truly is the basics. Like if somebody were to come here and see the things that we're doing with our portfolio companies, like there's nothing crazy or we don't have some crazy algorithm for marketing and sales and product. And like, oh yeah, you know, look at Alex's brand strategy. They've all been like the way that he posted this, he was trying to put it. I'm like, what? No. People like her video when she said this right here, it's because it's NLP. I'm like, I don't even know what NLP means. Right? And so a lot of people are inexperienced, attribute, I would say, problems or success to something complicated. But it is actually the exact opposite. What people who are billionaires know is that simple scales, fancy fails. Simple stuff done really well over and over. And when you pour the gasoline on that, that's what grows a company. Fixating on complicated solutions, it's never going to work. And so I just attribute it to most of the time, it is people that just don't have the experience. When I say experience, you haven't yet seen what happens next. And so you just believe, gosh, it seems like there has to be something easier than this. It has to get better, right? No, it doesn't. It just continues to be hard, but you get better at it and you acquire more skills. And then eventually you see, hey, I just got to do the simple stuff right. So the second principle or frame I want to give you for growing your business in 2024 is thinking in orders of magnitude rather than incremental improvements. So what do I mean by this? So one of our portfolio companies, I was reviewing all the materials for our quarterly ahead of time. And I was sitting there and I was reading it and I can feel when I'm uncomfortable. And I was reading it, I was like uncomfortable reading it. I was like, oh, something doesn't feel right. But it's not any one thing that's being said. What is it overall that doesn't feel good when I'm reading this? So I was staring at the monthly objectives and I was looking at them and I was just thinking like, something is off here and I cannot figure out what it is. It's just like, something doesn't feel right to me. And then I realized that I wasn't looking at the monthly objectives. I was looking at the yearly objectives. And when I was looking at them from a monthly objective, I was like, we could do more. And then I realized that I was looking at the yearly objectives and I was horrified. I was like, this is it? And it was like, I felt like I got hit with a ton of bricks. I was like, this is not going to grow the company. I thought that that was like what we're going to do for a month, let alone a year. I'm like, how on earth would that take a year? And so when I had that realization, I was like, why is this the case? Why would they set these as yearly objectives? Why would they think that this would grow the company? Because when I looked at the objectives, I was like, I think the company would grow like 20% if we did these things, which like, if you're just fighting like natural degradation of any system, like if you try to grow 20%, you're probably just going to remain the same. And so I was looking at the objectives and I was like, the issue is that we are thinking in terms of incremental improvements rather than orders of magnitude. And I would say that with a lot of companies that are below, you know, let's think, below 50 million in revenue, it doesn't help anybody to think in incremental improvements because it takes so much effort to not even just maintain a company, right? It takes effort to maintain a company. It takes even more effort to grow a company, like orders of magnitude different. Hey guys, a quick break to tell you that if you'd like to see more content from me that isn't just listening to my voice, you can go on and check out my YouTube channel as well. Just search Leila Hormozi and you'll see me in my face. Thanks again for listening and let's get back to the show. And so I was thinking to myself, how do I get this founder to see this the same way I see it? And so I posed a question and I just said, I need to get us thinking in a different frame of mind. So I said, what would it take to 15x this business this year? What would have to happen to 15x this business this year? Because here's the thing, most people can't even go to that level. Because I know what you're thinking right now. If you're like, 15x my business, everything would, right? You would need resources that you don't have today. You would need people that don't exist. You would need systems that are currently, you would need to outgrow your systems, which currently would absolutely break. And the thing is that what most people do when they hit that is they say, oh gosh, I don't think we can do that because like, think of all the stuff I'd have to do. It's like, yeah, that's like what growing a company is. And so when I realized that, I was like, cool. So we're going to write down everything it would take. And while we were doing this, it's really interesting because I could see the people on the team and the executive team was chiming in. And they're like, well, we couldn't do that because Sally, I don't think she has the skill. Right, we're going to need a new Sally. And then they're like, well, we couldn't do that because we would need to get on like Salesforce to make, right, it's another goal for the year, get on Salesforce. And then they're like, wait, you know, if we were doing that, we would have to compensate our sales team to, yes, so we're going to have to change the compensation of the sales team. Right, and so it's funny because all these objections as to why we shouldn't grow the business become the objectives that we do to grow the business. It's like everything that people say, that's why we couldn't grow the business. Those are the exact things that become the goals that help us grow the business. And that is how you grow a business. A lot of people think, oh, I couldn't grow my business because if I wanted to do that, I would need to hire 20 people this year. Well, great, then we're going to hire 20 people. What's the constraint of that? Is it cash? Is it recruiting power? Is it, what is it? And so the issue is that what I was seeing happen to everyone on the call is that they're keeping themselves stuck in this, I would say, like frame of thinking very small. And so unfortunately, what they were doing is like the whole time they kept telling me why they couldn't do the things. And I kept taking their objections and flipping them onto why we could do the thing. You just told me how to do it. You told me that system would break. So in fact, what that means is we need a new system. This is how we get there. You told me that Sally doesn't have that skill. Great. So we need someone who does have the skill. That's how we get there. Get this person. And so if you can do that, if you can take your objections and flip them into a prescription for how to grow your business, this is what people who win do. This is what successful businesses do. They look at the constraint and they turn it into an opportunity to achieve their goals. So I'll give you a personal example of this. So for me, for this year, I was like, okay, I just hit like 400K on Instagram. And so I was like, great. Maybe this year we could figure out like how, instead of getting to like 500K, like how would it get to 600 or 700K this year? And then I was like, you know, what I just realized is the same principles that I applied to business could be applied to content. So instead of saying, how am I going to get Leila from 400 to 600K this year, which doesn't really excite me, what would it take to get Leila from 400K to 3 million this year? What would have to happen? And so it can put me in a completely different frame of mind. I was like, well, I would dedicate twice as much time to content. I would start up a new podcast show. I would write a book. I would work on content every day rather than one day a week. And so I started just listing out all the things that I would have to do to make that happen. And so the same principle that you can apply to business, like I just explained, that I can apply to content, like I just explained, can be applied to any area of your life. And I think it puts you in a great frame because the likelihood that every time we say, hey, how am I going to 15x my business? How am I going to 6x my content? That we actually hit that exact 6x or 15x. I don't know. I don't have like the math on that or the statistics. But what I do know is that you'll hit more than if you try to grow 20%. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to ask yourself, what would it take to 15x my business in 2024? And then what I want you to do is your brain is going to go, oh my God, I can't do that. Here's all the reasons why I can't do it. And I want you to write down all the reasons you can't do it. And then what I want you to do is exactly what I just did, which is turn those reasons into tasks to do to grow the business. Okay, well, my operator, she's never operated a company. Great, we've got to get a new operator. Oh, well, my system couldn't support that many. Great, we've got to get a new system this year. Oh, well, my marketing, I would probably need 3 funnels and I only have 1. Great, we need to build 2 more funnels. And so every objection you have to growing your business can turn into a goal to grow it. And so I'm sure the next thing that you're going to think is that once you write down, you take all of the objections you have to growing your business and making more money, and then you take them and you put them into tasks or goals, and then you're going to look at it and say, well, gosh, you know, Layla, I don't know how to make a funnel that way, or I don't know how to migrate into that CRM, or I don't know how to build a sales team of 30 people. Okay, then there's a path that you get to take here, which is then you get to determine what skills do you need to acquire to grow the business to this degree? Or does just somebody have to have? So somebody has to have the skill of doing these things. It doesn't mean it needs to be you. And it is for you to decide, is it you or is it somebody else? But that's the way I grow my business, is I look at, okay, cool. How am I going to 10X or 15X my business this year, right? Then I look at all the reasons why I can't, because my brain likes to go there. I turn them into goals or tasks. And then I ask myself, great, now who is going to do it? And if I do not have that person, I will go find them. And if I don't have that skill, I will determine if I think it's the best use of my time to acquire it. Here's the thing. I can ask myself, how do I 15X? How do I 10X? How do I make something much bigger? Because I've spent a lot of time not identifying myself as a failure if I do not hit that. The reason for that is because I've seen 2 things. I've tried 2 different ways to set goals for myself and for my business. One way, I shoot really high and really far up there, like 15X. And the other way, I actually shoot lower because I've wanted to see, you know, does it feel better if we hit a goal, but it's actually like above where we thought that we were going to hit. And so we're like, oh, we're above it. But like, it actually wasn't like that much of a stretch. And I've set them where they're like way high above and we don't hit them. And that can sometimes not feel great. And what I've seen is that how I react to our success or not, right? And how I frame the goal to myself and to my team is more important than what it is itself. And so if we don't hit a goal and I tell my team that they suck, obviously they're going to feel bad and I'm going to feel bad. But if we don't hit a goal and I say, oh, well, you know, maybe we're not that great at setting goals, or hey, you know what? We did way better than we would have if we had aimed down here. Right? And I've seen it both ways. And I have seen that most of the time, setting a higher goal works, but how you manage your emotions around that goal and your expectations and the teams and how you react when you hit or don't hit a goal, I think is more important than if you're setting it higher or lower. I think a lot of businesses are very bad at setting goals. And so the reason that they're bad at it is because a lot of people just procrastinate and then do the thing when it is almost time to be done rather than work the entire way through. And if we can compress our goals and we can set higher goals that then force us to work more efficiently, I think it creates a better company. The third frame that I'll give you is the what would it take frame. Okay, so we were meeting with one of our portfolio companies and the business does around $6 million a year in revenue. It's on the smaller side and the business was growing for 3 quarters. And then this last quarter, it is stagnated. And I was talking to the CEO, asking her, you know, why do you think that this has occurred? What did you do? And then what did you do that caused it to stagnate, essentially? And I could tell that she was so in the weeds because she told me about 60 different things that they did as to why it stagnated. And I was like, I'm pretty sure like your executive assistant, like not bringing coffee didn't have anything to do with it stagnating. Nonetheless, what it told me is that she was very much in the weeds of the business and she was involved in absolutely everything. And that actually pointed to more of a problem itself, which was for every solution that we would present, she just told me 16 ways why it wouldn't work. And this is something that I learned really early on because I tend to, when someone presents me with a solution, the first thing that my brain does is it says, oh, this is why that won't work. And the thing is, I know everything that's happening in the business in all of the departments. So I could tell you why things wouldn't work, right? Because I can think of all the things that can go wrong because I'm very intricately involved, which is the case with many entrepreneurs. And so the frame that I flipped to her is I said, well, what would it take to make it work? And then she started listing out, begrudgingly, all of the things that she would need to do to make the business work. Well, I would need a new marketing and sales leadership. I would have to probably demote my head of customer success. I think that I would have to bring in somebody to create a new product. I would have to implement a way more rigorous sales training program. And I would probably have to build an in-house IT team. She's like, but we don't have any of those things. And that is what keeps a lot of businesses stuck, is this is something I see, is that they're constantly referencing what exists today as a reason for what cannot exist tomorrow. So a very tactical way to explain this is when I'm having a leader or a CEO build out their org chart, I have one rule, which is no names. So when they're building out an org chart, I say, I'd love you to build out the org chart. So I've asked them, right? We've gone through, what does it take to hit this revenue target? What does it take to hit, let's say we're going to do 15 million this year? And then they list out everything it takes. And I say, great, I'd love you to create an org chart that supports that. And they're like, okay, I'm like, one rule, no names on the org chart. And then this is what happens every time, is someone creates the org chart and the org chart looks great. Most of the time it's like, ah, that makes sense. We'll move maybe this or that. But like, overall, this makes a lot of sense. I think this would support our goals. And then they say, yeah, but, and as I'm going through and I'm asking questions, I can see their face getting more and more concerned. And I say, like, what's wrong? And it's the same thing every time. They're like, well, if this was the org chart, where would Sally be? And it's funny because that sounds crazy to say out loud, but there's usually one to three people in an organization that because the founder's so close to them, they don't change. They put off making massive changes to grow their business because they're concerned about that one person. And what it does when you have no-name org charts is it exposes to you that, one, you are capable of hitting the goal. You do know how to put the organization together to hit that goal. But also on the third consequence of that is that you probably do have people changes that you have to make. So all of the things that we just listed out that are reasons that the business could not hit that revenue target now become our goals for the year or the quarter or the month. This is the list of things we need to do to hit that revenue target. If we change these things, we upgrade these things, we add these people, then we are able to hit our targets. And so that's how you can use your natural inclination for negativity to your advantage if you can flip it. So if you've gone through the questions and you've asked yourself, what would it take? How would I get my business from 6 million in revenue to 15 million? How would I 15X my business? The next question is, who do you need to make it happen? So let me reinforce this to you. When we had our business gym launch and we started a company called Allen within the business, it was not supposed to be a software company. In fact, we just wanted to integrate software into our existing business. And I think a lot of people from the outside would say it was a big success. You know, essentially what we did is we used the profits from the existing business to help fund the creation of the software. And during that time, Alex oversaw the product and I oversaw the customer experience, the UX, and all the rest of the supporting pieces. And as the product came to fruition, what I realized very quickly after I started learning more about software was that neither of us knew anything about software and we had done it all incorrectly. And so we were about a year into the project and I realized that in order to grow the company to where I needed it to, we would have to undo a lot of the work that we had. And so I think that is why it was not as valuable as of a company as it could have been, because we didn't build it right from the get-go because we were not the right who's. And we thought we were bullish on doing that because, hey, you know, we'd started all these other companies ourselves. Why couldn't we do this one? Well, I didn't realize how big the knowledge gap was. And so with one of our portfolio companies, when we asked ourselves, hey, the company's worth, let's say, probably around 200 million today. If we wanted the company to be worth 500 million in 3 years, what kind of company would it have to be? What would we have to do? What would it take? And then the answer to that was it would probably need to be a software company. There would have to be not even a software company. It would have to be a tech-enabled company. And so that means there is technology that helps facilitate part of the product or service that is valuable to the customer. And so when we decided that, the next natural question was, who do we need? And what I emphasized to them was, nobody here out of all the three founders has software experience, not a lick of software experience. There's somebody who has marketing experience, there's product experience, and there's like design and operations experience. There was no software experience. And so the first thing that we would need to do is if we wanted the best chance of success, gun to my head, who would I have to hire for to reach those goals? And so the first thing that we did is we built out the new org chart with the who's that we needed. Because we know that, Hey, before we go and on our own try and build a software company, which we've never done before, maybe we should just, you know, hire people who have. And so a lot of people, what they do is you will go through the three questions that I posed to you. You figured out what you need to do to grow the business and how to have an awesome 2024. But then you get stuck at this piece, which is you think that you need to do all of it. And the thing is that you don't need to do all of it, but you do need to assemble the team that does. Your job as the CEO is to assemble the team that is capable of doing these things. And so if you're trying to grow the business in a way that you have no experience, it would make sense that you would probably, it would probably make sense to you that you would hire a consultant or a mentor or go to an event or, you know, purchase a course on that subject, right? What if you had your own in-house subject matter expert of that thing? Rather than taking a course on how to build software, what if you just hired somebody who had built a software and had them in your company and you just had access to them all day? It sounds simple, but that's how you do it. And that's how big companies get to where they are, because they have those resources internally rather than constantly grabbing externally and then trying to do it themselves. And so I'm sure the next natural question you're asking is, great, Leila, so I need to hire a CTO. Okay, but how do I even know that a CTO is good? Okay, so I apply the same principle to interviewing that I do to reading books. So if I'm trying to learn something that I've never learned before, I'm going to try and find the best books on the subject and read 10 of them, and then take the common threads that I see throughout them. And then usually those common threads end up being like, those are sound principles that seem to be agreed upon by all people. I take that and I apply that same concept to interviewing. So I will interview 10 candidates and I will ask them how to solve these problems that they would be doing in their role. And then I take the common threads from their solutions. And that is exactly what I use as the framework. So now I know what good looks like because I've interviewed people enough times to see what are the common threads that they all say. What are the things that all of them are repeating? And then I use that as my frame. And then I use that to develop a rubric to which I can then put all of the candidates through to say who's a A+, a B, or a C.